Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Shrewsbury, Northborough, Westborough, and Southborough. The program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Community Advocate, MySouthborough.com, and the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. This is John Riccio, reading today with Mike Gregory, and we are coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And to start our show today, here is Mike with everything you need to know about Shrewsbury.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon. We're going to start with a couple of stories about some medical issues in town. Shrewsbury police and fire chiefs respond to medical emergency at Memorial Day Parade. Shrewsbury officials leaped into action after a medical emergency occurred before the start of the town's Memorial Day Parade on May 25th. It served as a reminder that, for first responders, duty can call at any moment. At about 9:30 a.m., State Representative Hannah Kane was finishing her Memorial Day remarks outside of Town Hall when everyone's attention was drawn away. A parade participant had suffered a medical emergency. Within seconds, officials listening to Kane's remarks leaped into action. Shrewsbury Chief of Police Kevin Anderson and Shrewsbury Fire Chief Seth Colby were the first two responders, followed by Shrewsbury Police Lieutenant Nick Perna. Several members of the Honor Guard left their posts to help, and many could be spotted running to the scene with medical equipment. Many first responders like Colby and members of the Honor Guard were dressed in ceremonial outfits. It was also pouring rain, and the lawn in front of the town hall had become muddy. Still, the Shrewsbury Police Department and Shrewsbury Fire Department provided care until an ambulance arrived about 10 minutes later, and the parade started about 15 minutes behind schedule. And the other medical issue, man pulled from Lake Quinsigamon after leaving ambulance in Worcester. New details released Friday describe how police officers jumped into Lake Quinsigamon to help bring a 19-year-old man safely after he fled from an ambulance earlier in the week. The man had been transported by ambulance from Spencer to UMass Memorial Medical Center before he ran from the vehicle, according to the Worcester Police. Worcester police and firefighters responding to the lake after he entered the water. Shrewsbury police said multiple officers launched the department's boat after being notified that a person was in the water. The department's jet ski was also launched later as officers assisted the Worcester and UMass police. For about 2 hours, the man refused to leave the water or comply with police, according to Shrewsbury police. The Worcester Police Crisis Intervention Team also tried unsuccessfully to persuade him to get out of the lake. At about 12:10 p.m., Lieutenant Caviston and Detective Sheena, who had deployed the Shrewsbury police jet ski, decided to jump into the water and physically escort the man to safety, according to Shrewsbury police. The man was brought to shore, handcuffed, and loaded onto the Shrewsbury police boat. He was then taken to the docks at Regatta Point and transferred to an ambulance, according to police. Shrewsbury officials on land also responded, along with Shrewsbury Police Drone Unit and Massachusetts Environmental Police. Additional details about the man's condition or identity were not released. And here's some town news. Let the naming begin. Select Board creates policy to name municipal property. Have you ever looked at a piece of municipal property and thought that you have the perfect name for it? Do you know someone whose name deserves to grace a building, a bench, a street, or a meeting place? If so, the Select Board is ready to hear from you. On April 28th, the Select Board adopted a municipal property naming policy. Once someone submits an idea to the Select Board, the policy requires a public notice, a comment period of 14 days or more, and a public hearing. Then the proposed name will be put up for a vote. The policy provides a standardized framework governing how municipal assets under select board care, custody, or control are named or renamed. The policy is intended to ensure that naming decisions reflect the community's values, maintain operational clarity, and comply with applicable ethical and legal standards, said then select board member Beth Cassavant. Certain municipal property, like things owned by the Parks Department, Conservation Commission, and Selco, may be precluded from this policy. Significant portion of Route 140 to be repaved this summer. Route 140 is set to get a little easier on your car's tires. On May 12th, Town Manager Kevin Mizikar announced that the Massachusetts Department of Transportation will be repaving a portion of Route 140 from Main Street to Wachusett Avenue. Repaving the 1.5-mile stretch will cost approximately $900,000. It's an extraordinary opportunity, said Mizikar. The state will be investing in the roadway. It's a state-numbered roadway, but it's town-maintained, and it's something that we have to do. But our partnership and relationship with MassDOT got this project on their radar. The paving job, when combined with approximately $2.4 million in work, means that Shrewsbury Roads will receive approximately $3.5 million in repairs over the summer months, Mizikar told the select board. How far would you walk to the supermarket? Planning board challenges layout of proposed 270-unit mixed-use development. On May 7th, developers walked the planning board through plans for a proposed 270-unit mixed-use property between Maple Avenue, Oak Ave, and Route 9. The major question, will future residents be able to walk through the development itself? The proposed project is located on 24.5 acres of land at 335 Maple Avenue, and that's the former site of the bottling factory. Developer Sam Adams, represented by attorney Mark Borenstein, has subdivided the lot into two parts, a 400,000-square-foot lot 1, closest to Route 9, and a 680-square-foot lot, Route 2, located north of Lot 1, closer to Maple Ave. The planning board is treating each lot separately. Lot 1 is a commercial development. 7 retail buildings, about 4,000 square feet each, will be constructed parallel to one another along Route 9. Uses would include a car wash, a bank, several other businesses. Over 250 parking places would be constructed. Lot 2 is a mixed-use development, which may be constructed despite the recent 2-year moratorium on mixed-use development in the Lakeway Overlay District. Plans call for a 20,000-square-foot supermarket, a 270-unit development, and over 600 parking spaces. The supermarket would be a specialty and not a full-size, according to developers. The residential component would be split into 4 5-story buildings. Parking would be surrounded the structures, and between both lots, over 6,000 car trips would be generated. The town would net nearly $1 million in annual tax revenue from the project. Central to the current debate surrounding the project is the idea of connectivity. The project seeks to use the Lakeway Overlay District's mixed-use provisions to include housing as part of the plans. But the term mixed-use infers a certain connectivity to the space, something that Borenstein argues the project has, referencing pocket parks and sidewalks. It has safe and logical pedestrian connectivity. This is the evolution of design we're really proud of, and that's really a labor of love for this particular team. We've talked about new sidewalks. Connectivity is prime at this particular site, said Borenstein. Topographical issues continue to create difficulties for the site, and due to the landscape, plans call for a supermarket to be at the base of the hill, with 4 residential buildings situated at top, closer to Oak Street. The elevation changes forces an elaborate network of ramps to achieve ADA compliance. According to the developers, the supermarket would be about 1,100 feet from the furthest unit, using non-accessible routes, including stairs. The accessible routes to the supermarket stretches 2,500 feet, about a half a mile. Skeptical planning board members said that a half a mile commute isn't connotated with connectivity and that residents are unlikely to carry groceries uphill. I don't see anything integrated about this site. It just so happens that the apartments and the supermarket sit on the same building lot. I'm struggling with the issues of integration. Nothing on this site is blended, said planning board member Steve Rodelakis. Added planning board member Timothy Fitzgerald, if anybody at the top of the hill is going grocery shopping, they're using their car. Developers say the walk will be an experience. I think it's important to say that 2,100 feet is a long distance, of course, but the idea is that it's going to be an experience. It's not just going to be a monotonous journey. We'll have some pull-off spaces. It's an opportunity for the community within the development to interact, a member of the development team said. Bernstein also targeted another overlay district mixed-use property, Lakeway Commons. Bernstein argued that his project required far fewer permits, had more open space, and was more connected. The furthest accessible commute to Whole Foods from Lakeway residents is approximately 1,400 feet. Lakeway Commons is a great project. I visit regularly. I enjoy the Whole Foods and all the amenities. Certainly it's our position that our project is more compliant with the Lakeway bylaw than what was granted to Lakeway Commons, said Borenstein. Planning board members remain skeptical. Lakeway Commons has more commercial development, for instance, giving walkers more choices. The developer's calculation measured the distance from the residences to Whole Foods, not to other businesses. I just don't see 20,000 square feet of commercial space justifying 270 units, said Rodelakis. You look at Lakeway Commons, that's an integrated commercial and residential development. Recycling curbside audits 2026. This is a notice from the town's sustainability committee. To keep our community green, protect tax dollars, and ensure our collective recycling effort counts, the town of Shrewsbury will be continuing its curbside recycling checkup program to help communities save money and keep our workers safe. What is recycling contamination? Recycling contamination is the percentage of the weight of our recyclables that is not recyclable. Items like scrap metal, old kitchen tools like pots and holiday lights, and more add to the amount of our recycling that can't be recycled. Here's a breakdown of how these updates benefit our community. Saving tax dollars. Recycling contamination, items that can't be recycled, drives up the cost of recycling pricing. These checks help educate residents on what can and cannot be recycled, helping keeping costs down and keeping our contamination level low. Safety of recycling workers. When items such as garden hoses or holiday lights are placed in recycling carts, they tangle the equipment and require workers to manually cut them out of the machinery, posing safety risks. A sustainable Shrewsbury. This program helps us let us know about how recycling works and what can't be recycled right at your curb. This helps ensure our town's collective recycling efforts count towards making Shrewsbury a sustainable community, a priority that many residents have expressed to the town. And the goal is friendly feedback. This consists of a brief check of recycled materials by crews to identify any potential recycling contaminants. If there are non-recyclable materials in the bin, a helpful tag will be left with information on what can't be recycled. These are strictly for education. There are no fines and no tickets. If a tag is left, simply remove the items listed and your bin will be ready for collection the following week. By recycling correctly, we reduce costs and free up tax dollars for the community services that matter the most. The reviews are in. Shrewsbury Town Meeting goes electronic voting. In 2016, Shrewsbury Town Meeting officials entered the technology age. This year's town meeting, held on May 18th at Oak Middle School, marked the first year of electronic voting in Shrewsbury's history. As the town's elected town meeting representatives entered the building, they were handed a clicker used to cast a vote. Each clicker installed by Meridia Interactive Solutions had two buttons, a yes and a no. When moderator James Kane called for a town meeting vote, Town meeting members had 10 seconds to either press one or two buttons or choose to abstain before the official tally was broadcast on a projection. All 37 of the town's articles on May 18th were decided via the clicker. The town's neighbors, including Northboro, Westboro, and Grafton, have been voting electronically for years, but they conduct open town meeting-style assemblies with drastically different turnout rates each year. Shrewsbury's representative town meeting structure ensured a turnout of about 240 members, and for years, the town had preferred a simple voice vote when the loudest crowd won. When both sides were comparatively noisy, a standing vote was taken, but that sometimes became time-consuming. So the town looked forward to electronic voting. In 2018, an electronic voting study committee was formed. In 2025, town meeting approved the general bylaw amendment to allow voting by electronic devices. When it was game time, electronic voting performed reasonably well. There was a wonky opening vote that led to a three-minute delay and a couple of dead clickers that demanded attention, but overall, town leaders were impressed with the technology. Select board members were enthused. Despite some kinks, this is definitely some progress in our making local government more transparent and accessible. I'm glad we got town meeting done in one day, and I think the clickers are reduced the number of standing votes to zero. I think we're able to see quick, accurate counts, said Select Board Vice Chair Carlos Garcia. The electronic voting system was easy to use, making voting smooth and efficient. It enhances accountability and transparency and provides meaningful data that will help make informed decisions. Select board members pointed to the fact that because each clicker is assigned to a town meeting member, a voting record could also be developed. In the voice vote era, determining who voted for certain measures was nearly impossible. It was fantastic. I liked the fact that every single vote, you knew what the tally was immediately. And honestly, it didn't take as much more time. I felt there was a lot more clarity. It would be nice to see how town meeting voters voted in the future, said committee member Greg Richards. And with that, we'll close on news and events from Shrewsbury. And after the next public service announcement, John will be back with news and events from Westboro.
The following is a public service announcement from the Worcester, Massachusetts Association for the Blind Support Group. Though vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester, the group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center. The group provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that's Marion at 508-754-0672.
And now we'll continue the program with the news and events from Westboro. Westboro Planning Director submits resignation. On May 19th, Planning Board Chair Hazel Norse announced that Westboro Planning Director Jennifer Gingras would be resigning from her position. Gingras assumed her role in Westboro in July of 2023. She previously served as town planner in Pepperell from September 2021 to July 2023. Gingras has accepted the position of Director of Community and Economic Development for the town of Harvard. According to the job description, Gingras will coordinate all economic, land use, and community development planning in the town, including studying Harvard's community and economic needs, resources, and potential development opportunities. It's quite exciting because Fort Devens is in Harvard, so she's going to have some work to do with renovating that whole area and the kind of things they can do with mixed use, Norse said. The May 19th meeting was Gingras' last with the planning board. Her final day in Westboro has not yet been announced. It's been a privilege to work alongside you, Gingras told the planning board. You guys have always been really engaging, thoughtful, and definitely invested in the town's future, and I really appreciate that. I'm going to miss working with you. She's worked tirelessly, Norris said. She spends more time at her job than most of us do, and I admire her for being able to put the time in that she has done. She has really worked so hard to make this town a better town, and we're going to miss her greatly. But I wish her all the best in her new pursuits. Westboro Police Department increases presence at downtown Rotary. Amid a town-wide discussion about the proposed peanut-shaped redesign of the Rotary, many residents have called for short-term fixes to address safety concerns downtown. Some residents have asked for more traffic enforcement. With speeding, aggressive driving, failure to yield, and distracted driving occurring in the high-traffic downtown area, the Westboro Police Department is increasing its presence. Additionally, a radar speed sign, while not yet active, has been installed on South Street leading toward the Rotary. The Westboro Police Department plays an important role in enhancing safety around the Rotary because we are responsible for helping ensure that all users of the roadway, motorists, pedestrians, cyclists, and nearby businesses, can all travel safely through one of the busiest traffic areas in town, said Police Chief Todd Minardi. He added, "Our goal is not simply enforcement for enforcement's sake, but rather to improve driver behavior, reduce the likelihood of crashes, and create a safer environment for everyone who utilizes the area." Since the intersection carries a large volume of traffic, Minardi said that even small improvements can make a significant impact on overall safety. Public safety is always a shared responsibility, and we are committed to working collaboratively with town officials, residents, and the business community to support safety downtown, he said. And another police-related article, Westboro Police Department breaks up street takeover. On April 12th, the Westboro Police Department responded to an alleged street takeover event, which typically involves a gathering of a large number of vehicles in a secluded lot off of Research Drive. About 10 to 20 vehicles were at the site upon arrival, and one vehicle allegedly accelerated toward the officers, nearly striking a cruiser, before accelerating onto a roadway at a high rate of speed. The car reportedly had no headlights. The vehicle crashed. The operator, identified as Oscar Rivera, 18, of Clinton, fled on foot, but was apprehended after a brief chase. During the investigation, officers recovered a loaded ghost gun, additional ammunition, and a ski mask. Rivera faces several charges. The Westboro Police Department still actively is taking steps to deter these dangerous gatherings from occurring within our community and will continue working with regional partners to address this issue throughout the summer months. Westboro self-storage property sells for $12.35 million. A Westboro property featuring a 119,994 square foot self-storage building has sold for $12.35 million to a Brooklyn-based real estate investment firm. Merritt Hill Capital, a firm focused on investing in storage properties, purchased the site at 201 Flanders Road, according to the Worcester District Registry of Deeds. Merritt Hill Capital has raised $578.3 million for self-storage investments since 2025, purchasing 66 properties for $525.7 million and selling 62 properties in that time frame, according to its website. The two-story structure building was constructed as a multi-use structure and later converted into a self-storage facility, according to real estate data firm CoStar. The property was sold by Burlington-based R.J. Kelly Company, which had purchased it for $4.9 million in 2018. Formerly operated under R.J. Kelly's Store Yourself brand, the facility is now operated by Utah-based Extra Space Storage. The sale follows the $18 million sale of a Framingham self-storage facility in February. Investment in self-storage sites surged in the immediate aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, reaching an all-time high of $13.5 billion in the fourth quarter of 2021, according to a 2025 market report from Chicago-based Cushman & Wakefield. Transaction volume has leveled off since, but investment interest in the sector remains high. The Westboro parcel received a 2026 assessment of $8.54 million, according to municipal property records. Indian restaurant in Westboro to open after long wait. A new Indian restaurant, slated to open at 225 Turnpike Road, secured its liquor license at the April 28th Westboro Select Board meeting. Desi Chaurasta, a chain with more than 25 locations in the United States, including restaurants in Texas, Georgia, Arizona, and New Hampshire, is looking to open its doors by the end of May. According to permit documents, the approximately 5,000-square-foot space will include a dining area and lounge with a maximum occupancy of 171. Over the last year, the owner, Sudha Krishnamurthy of MYPI Foods LLC, and her team have worked to complete a number of renovations to transform the site. The building was formerly home to Uno Pizzeria, which closed in July 2024. People love the food because it's close to what they get in India, so that's a game changer, Krishnamurthy's husband, Saravaran Natesan, explained to the select board. It's spicy, though. I'm giving you a warning. Natesan explained that he and his wife saw success with their business in Virginia and decided to open here in Westboro. I believe this will be a successful one, he said. Welcome to Westboro. Looking forward to seeing the restaurant. I'm hearing good things about the inside. It's supposed to be beautiful in there, said Select Board member Patrick Welch. The restaurant also sits in front of the long-abandoned Regal Cinemas, which is slated to become a Hindu house of worship, which is currently situated at 275 Turnpike Road. Corridor 9, 495 Regional Chamber of Metro West is hosting some upcoming events. Today, Women in Business Networking Event is going to be held from 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Brio 33 restaurant. On the 11th, the 40th Annual School Business Partnership Golf Tournament will be played from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at Juniper Hills Golf Course. And on the 17th, the Chamber Orientation will take place from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. at the Willows in Westboro Community Room. Visit the Chamber's website at www.corridor9.org for more information or to register for events. Westboro Boys Tennis ready for another playoff push. The Westboro Boys Tennis team takes every opponent seriously, but not as seriously as it takes intra-squad competition. The Rangers' top two players, junior Zach Forget and sophomore Vikram Hiranandani, are always eyeing one another's spot in the best way possible. Throughout the season, they have engaged in a series of challenge matches to determine who gets the privilege to compete at number one singles. They have split time throughout the year. They are both exceptional young men and exceptional tennis players, said head coach Len O'Neill, now in his 10th year with Westboro. They're pushing one another. Each of them wants to play their best, and they help each other. Competition from all angles, from other teams, from their own teammates, has helped Westboro boys tennis to another excellent season. After winning the Division II championship in 2024 and falling in last year's title match, the Rangers are once again among the state's best teams. We've made each other so much better, said Forget. From where we started last year to the spot where we were at the end of the year, we had pushed one another so much further. By the end of the year, we were playing so well. Despite last year's heartbreak at the championship, the season went exactly to plan, according to O'Neill. The group got to play more tennis in high-pressure environments, experience that will carry over to this season. We didn't expect to get that far, said O'Neill. Every win was an opportunity to play more tennis, to play some high-pressure tennis, to build for this year, to build for next year. Win or lose, that's going to benefit us in the long run. Added Hiranandani, coming into this season with all that experience from before, we know what to expect now and how to work throughout the season. It's that teamwork aspect that and pushing each other. Now that we have experience, it should be easier. And though the Rangers made a big push last season, they also understand that last year was last year. Westboro has been ranked number one in Division II, but team isn't watching the standings too carefully, choosing instead to focus on its next match. We were the number seven seed last year, and we made a run to the finals, Hiranandani said. Really, what we are trying to do is take it one match at a time. Right now, we're focused on our current opponent, not any of the other ones. And if they're not focused on their current opponent, there's a good chance the Rangers are spending time around the team. Trips to Chick-fil-A, pasta parties, and rides in the team's minibus have led to some great camaraderie, even if that camaraderie is tested during challenge matches. Westboro is one of the best teams as far as team atmosphere, said Forget. Some teams' kids are on the bench. I don't know if they're having the best time. Westboro, we're having a ball. We're a tightly knit team, and the team needs to get along. They play a lot of tennis. They like to play. It's easy when they like to play. They're like sponges. They listen. They like each other. They hang out with each other all the time. They play for each other, said O'Neill. We've established that team aspect to it. That ends our Westboro segment for today. Now, Mike will come back after the next public service announcement with everything you need to know from Southboro.
Hi, my name's Owen Devlin, and this is my story. When my doctor told me I was losing my vision, I was devastated. I worried about my future. How would I attend college, find a great job, start a family, or even travel around my own neighborhood? Luckily, my doctor also told me about the Mass Commission for the Blind. They connected me and my family to a counselor who helped us to set a vision for my future, one that included assistive technology to allow me to go to school and find a meaningful job, a white cane to help me navigate, and even tips on how to use Google Maps on my mobile phone. I found out that losing my vision wasn't the end of the world.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450. 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
We're back, and Mike is all ready to tell you all about what's going on in Southboro.
Thanks, John. How a Southboro veteran gave Vietnam War soldiers second chances. For years, veterans of the U.S. military dealt with anger and hatred from citizens dissatisfied with the Vietnam War. Like many soldiers, Southboro's Chris Robbins, who served in the U.S. Army from 1969 to 71, stopped wearing his uniform in public to avoid comments. But there's been a shift over time. About a decade ago, Robbins stopped hiding his uniform in a garment bag in his trunk. Instead, he was invited to events where he and fellow veterans were honored and celebrated. He recalls attending an event at Algonquin Regional High School. That's where he had one of his very first heartfelt welcomes back. "It's been wonderful and a remarkable change," said Robbins. With family members who served in almost every major conflict, he said he always felt good about his service. Although he didn't agree with the Vietnam War, he remained proud of his service and the extraordinary soldiers who joined him during the commitment. "Even though it was a big mistake, we didn't deserve to be treated poorly," he said. The change in public perception has many veterans like Robbins a second chance to celebrate the sacrifices they made for the country. Anger about the war wasn't limited to citizens back home. Drafted soldiers struggled during their service. Some turned to drugs and ended up imprisoned, while others, feeling unwanted in their units, faced getting dishonorable discharge at any moment. However, during his service, Robbins and his fellow officers were able to provide the dissatisfied soldiers with their very own second chance. Because of his experience at working for Outward Bound in Maine, Robbins was given the mission to develop and implement a unique rehabilitation program at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, which offered soldiers the opportunity to become productive service members and obtain an honorable discharge at the end of their duty. The program, known as Spartan Pathfinder, ran at the height of the Vietnam War for 4 25-day sessions over the course of a year. It saw a 60% success rate. Robbins said that he was mostly impressed by how supportive the military were of the program, providing all the resources necessary to help these men. Participants underwent a series of outdoor challenges that taught them survival and leadership skills. The outdoors were used as a means to confront them with the challenges of life and how to get through it as a team, Robbins explained. Soldiers participated in rugged training techniques such as cliff climbing and rappelling, wilderness survival, a 30-mile expedition, and other service projects. "We did some challenges that were pretty risky," Robbins said. "I almost didn't make it myself." "But why did the program work?" "Partially because of the reward," said Robbins, "whose soldiers eager for the opportunity to renew themselves in the military and obtain an honorable discharge. But it was also because of people who ran the program, who Robbins said were some of the best NCOs and officers. At the end of one of the programs, one soldier was completing his final 5-mile rucksack run. Limping after hurting his knee, he finally crossed the finish line. Beaming with pride, Robbins recalled telling him, "You've finished, you've got it." And the man responded, "No, sir, I've just begun." When he had earned his release from prison and the opportunity for an honorable discharge, the man had decided to make a career out of the military. His records were expunged and he joined the Special Forces. "It was a tear-filled moment. I couldn't believe it. That stayed with me my whole life," said Robbins, noting he remains in contact with him to this day. The Food Pantry is seeking volunteers. Earlier this month, the Southboro Food Pantry added more community members in need of their client list. As of mid-May, they were serving over 200 people and counting, which they described as the highest number they've had in quite a long time. That detail was from a Facebook request for food donations, but more recently, organizers reached out to ask me to let readers know that they're also in great need of more helping hands. Volunteers are needed to support organizing and distributing food to the food pantry's clients. There are a number of activity volunteers could select from. You could sign up for a regular shift for one of them or multiple roles. The work they need the most helpers is with helping the clients during their shopping hours, Thursday evenings and or Friday mornings. Setup help is also needed starting 45 minutes prior to the setup and after the breakdown. The shopping hours on Thursdays are from 6 to 7 p.m. and on Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. Other work the pantry needs help with include dating food items, bagging groceries, and restocking. Restocking work could be done on flexible hours on Mondays or Tuesdays. Drivers are also needed to deliver orders and on Wednesdays to fetch items from the Worcester County Food Bank and pick up donated bagels from the New York Bagel Store. The pantry also needs support for computer work, which would include placing express and delivery orders. If you're interested in helping out, please reach out to the volunteer coordinator, Kathy Kea, and that's K-E-A, and her email address is Kathy K, C-A-T-H-Y-K-E-A, at yahoo.com. If you don't have the time to help, you can also donate the food to their clients on their website. Pops Night at Algonquin, June 3rd. Algonquin's annual Pops Night is the school's end-of-year concert and the final performance for the graduating seniors. This year's musical celebration is tomorrow evening. The event will be held tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the high school's gymnasium. The concert features every instrumental and vocal ensemble in the school. For the occasion, the gym is transformed into a Boston Pop-style venue with seating at several hundred guests, including reserved tables, round tables on the floor. Those tables are already sold out, but there are plenty of room in the bleachers. It's a bit more light and colorful than the school's usual formal black and white affairs. According to prior year's announcements, the musical selections are also different from a typical school concert. Pops Night features music from movie soundtracks, musical theater, and pop tunes ranging from rock to jazz. In addition to offering a good time, the event raises funds for the Northborough-Southborough Music Association. That group is also currently recruiting parent volunteers to help set up, clean up, and ticket sales. Northborough-Southborough Music Association Gold members are each entitled to two free tickets. General admission for bleacher seating is $10 per person, and tickets can be purchased at the door. To further support the fundraiser, the Northborough-Southborough Musical Association has partnered again with Yummy Mummy, and it looks to me like there are a couple of individual treat options for those who don't have a table. Those who have already paid to reserve a table are encouraged to buy an entire platter of goodies for their group. And again, that concert is tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. at Algonquin Regional High School. Excuse me. Also, some additional events for tomorrow evening or tomorrow afternoon include Trailblazers meeting 3 to 4 p.m. at Southborough Senior Center. The Group for Active Seniors holds a monthly meeting to plan upcoming events and activities. Any seniors interested in helping or learning more are welcome to join them. Also, tomorrow, on Wednesday, is a food truck festival from 3 to 7 p.m. at St. Mark's Meadow at the corner of Route 85 and 30. And that's part of the annual series organized by Southborough Rotary featuring trucks selling dinner and ice cream. The event takes place on Wednesday evenings over 3 to 4 weeks in June. Meditation for the Nations. That's 4:30 to 5 p.m. at St. Mark's Church Parish Hall, 27 Main Street. The church invites community members troubled by division, unrest, and fear in our country to share concerns with others and take part in a guided and silent meditation. The bi-weekly program is open to all. And finally, tomorrow evening, the annual Friends of the Library meeting at 7:30 to 8:45 at the Southborough Library. Annual member meetings to elect the board and review the past and upcoming years. We're always happy for members and prospective members to join us if you're interested. If you are, email friendsofsouthboroughlib@gmail.com. Join the Southborough Open Land Foundation Board of Trustees. The Southborough Open Land Foundation has asked me to share a couple of news items. One highlights from their recent annual meeting where they gave an update on their ongoing nature preservation efforts and gave out the Elaine Beals Conservation Award. They also recognized a retiring longtime board member, which leads to their second item, a call for volunteers to fill two seats on their Board of Trustees. Southborough Open Land Foundation annual meeting honored Rick Ellis and Joyce Greenleaf. The Southborough Open Land Foundation held its annual meeting on Wednesday, May 13th, bringing together trustees, volunteers, and community members to celebrate another year of conservation work. Southborough Open Land Foundation is a private, nonprofit land trust dedicated to protecting Southborough's natural resources. Since its founding in 1988, the organization has preserved 15 properties totaling nearly 200 acres of open space. Its most visited property, the 58-acre Beals Preserve, draws walkers and nature lovers year-round. Southborough Open Land Foundation is supported primarily by public donations, which fund trail maintenance and habitat stewardship. President Destin Heelman opened the meeting by introducing the Board of Trustees, reviewing this year's accomplishments, among them the recipient of a grant to develop a forestry management plan for Beals Preserve. He also recognized the volunteers whose efforts keep the foundation's property thriving. Trustee Sally Waters presented this year's Elaine Beals Award to Joyce Greenleaf, given annually to a resident who has demonstrated outstanding leadership in environmental conservation. The award recognized Joyce for her 20 years of service and leadership on the stewardship committee and in responsible for the care of the 90-acre Brake Hill conservation land. At her personal commitment as a pollinator-friendly native plant gardening is a hands-on inspiration for the broader community. The evening also included the election of trustees Eileen Sandberg and Sally Waters. And I think with that, we'll close on news and events from Southborough after the next public service announcement. John will be back to conclude the program with news and events from Northborough.
Hi, the Bay State Council of the Blind has available free Braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.
And now we'll complete our hour with the news from Northborough. Peasley School plans range from 48.5 to 112.5 million dollars. Initial numbers for Margaret E. Peasley Elementary School are in. On May 5th, the Peasley School Building Committee met to get an initial look at the dollar estimates for a Peasley refresh. Currently, there are three main options, A, B, and C, with various offshoots, and the committee will be tasked with choosing the best course of action. Option A would involve a baseline renovation to the building that would bring the school up to code. The work, designed to accommodate 250 students, would encompass about 45,000 square feet and cost approximately $48.5 million. An evaluation of the existing building's condition by a group of consultants determined that 36% of the building is considered salvageable. Option B would bring the school to approximately 76,000 square feet. The K-5 school would add pre-kindergarten classes, bringing the expected enrollment to 310 students. The preliminary cost would be approximately $98.3 million. Option C would remove one elementary school from the district and develop Peasley into a centralized 3rd through 5th grade 95,000-square-foot school. The construction would accommodate 625 students and run about $112.5 million. Option B and Option C each have variations that impact the dollar amount. For instance, Some Option C plans call for a completely new building, while others target different additions to the current structure. The Peasley School Building Committee, incorporating community feedback, is expected to evaluate each option against certain criteria to develop an understanding about which option would be suitable. The work would continue throughout the summer. Peasley School was built in 1962 and is not currently compatible with a 21st century education. Peasley remodel discussions began in 2000. Since 2015, a renovation project has been targeted. In 2025, Northborough was invited into the Massachusetts School Building Authority pipeline, allowing about 48% of eligible project costs to be reimbursed by the state. If all goes according to plan, town meeting would vote on the Peasley design in April of 2027. Construction would commence in January 2028, and the building would welcome the community by the start of the school year in 2030. Prolific local artist selected to paint Northborough Town Hall mural. Local artist Melissa Pandina was selected by the Northborough Cultural Council to paint the Seasons of Northborough mural. The mural will be displayed at Northborough Town Hall in June. Pandina is a professional muralist and studied at Mass Art. Her specialty is community-engaged muralism, and her work has been featured across Massachusetts, including community murals in Marlborough and at Southwick's Zoo. She said she's excited to paint a mural so close to her home in Westborough. The theme of the mural is Seasons of Northborough, which Pandina interpreted through an apple tree motif, and a focus on how children play through the change of seasons. Pandina said she's so excited to see how the design comes together and how the community reacts to the mural once it's fully installed on the town hall. Northborough Cultural Council member Jennifer Tolman said, after seeing Pandina's work in Springfield and her vision for this project in Northborough, she immediately knew she was the right choice. 25 trees planted in downtown Northborough. On a brisk October morning, laughter, teasing, and chatter could be heard behind Northborough Town Hall. People gathered over hot Dunkin' coffee and bagels, looking over a list of addresses that would soon get new trees planted in their front yards. Soon, coffee cups were traded for shovels, and people dispersed throughout town to get to work. The volunteers ended up planting 25 trees from residents' houses to the police station as part of the Beautify Northborough Center Street tree planting program. It was great, especially working with the property owners, to see how enthusiastic they were about the trees. I think it was a win-win for everybody, said Planning Director Lori Connors. It's the first event of its kind in Northborough, thanks to a group of volunteers from a local company. As part of an annual volunteer day, 20 employees from Trelleborg, located at 10 Forbes Road, got their hands dirty to help Northborough. We're all about community, and we're looking for ways to give back to our community, said Tim Faged, the volunteer coordinator for Trelleborg. The Northborough Planning Department received $26,000 in American Rescue Plan Act funds in the fall of 2024, according to Connors. The project is part of an ongoing effort to beautify downtown Northborough. Part of it is beautification, and part of it is also remediating climate change, Connors said. When Fagad reached out to the town looking for volunteer opportunities for Trelleborg, Connors said she jumped at the opportunity. Connors said with the use of volunteers, the funds were able to stretch much further than they would have if the town hired private landscapers to plant the trees. The team is really excited for this because we think it would be the future of Northborough that we're dealing with. This is our community. This is where we work and where we want to make it even better, he said. There will be another planting in the spring, we hope, and the town is actively looking for volunteers. For many of the volunteers, the chilly morning didn't mean a change in routine. It was a chance to give back to the community they spend a major part of their week in, whether or not they live in town. I've never planted a tree before, so I'm learning a lot, volunteer Alex Mashera told the community advocate outside a home on Pleasant Street. I was excited to get to do something like this. I always feel like volunteering in any way I can. Helping the community is great, Mashera said. Now that summer is here, we can enjoy the result of all their labors. A group of mailmen make music together. A group of local postmen have put its stamp on the music scene. Postal Pals performed its first official show at the Vincent Picard Post a while ago. The band is made up of four Northborough mailmen, Glenn, Tom, Matt, and Phil, who requested to keep their last names anonymous. We are just a group of friends who wanted to play music together, Glenn told the community advocate. After their first official performance at the Picard Post, they hope to be able to play in other venues. This program is production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. We'll be here next week and hope you will be here to join us. If you would like hard copies of the program, call 508-797-1117.
This is Bird Note. A city lake may seem quiet and still at first, but with a little time, you might start to hear its music. Female wood ducks call out to each other, keeping an eye out for predators. Red-winged blackbirds sing from the cattails. The males perch high on the stems and show off their red shoulder patches, while the females search for food deep in the undergrowth. A belted kingfisher flies the length of the shoreline, rattling and diving at small fish. Several pairs of mallards paddle around the shallows, quacking companionably as they dunk their heads in the water looking for food. From a woody thicket along the bank, male song sparrows belt out their chorus all day long. But when a red-tailed hawk passes overhead, everyone falls silent. Stick around long enough, and the music will begin again. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is brought to you by Teton Science Schools, specializing in outdoor learning experiences and education in Grand Teton National Park. More at tetonscience.org.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear.
We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.